This is the Should Have Bet More podcast, presented by Goal Boys Network. Here's your host, Will Hill.
Welcome to the Should Have Bet More podcast, presented by Goal Boys. Coming up on the show, Ian McMillan of Sports Illustrated will join us. We'll talk some NFL Week 3 Thursday Night Football, his takeaways from the first couple weeks of the season. I will get to some baseball here in a minute. Just touch up on these pennant races as we are 2 weeks away from postseason baseball, less than 2 weeks left in the season, 11 games, 12 games for some of these teams. It's such a long season, but you look up and it is kind of hard to believe 11 games left for these teams. But we'll start with football. And you know, by the time people listen to this, it's Wednesday, maybe it's Thursday. I usually would not go back to the Monday night football game. What happened on Monday night, though, was one of the more ridiculous things, and it makes you feel stupid for betting on this league. For people who haven't seen it, I'm sure most people have either seen it or heard about it now. Philly's up by three. Chance, minute 40 left. Atlanta's out of timeouts, up three, and Philly's got like third and three from the, plus the 13-yard line. Run the ball. You take away Atlanta's last timeout. You bleed the clock to under a minute. And either get the first down or you go for it, you kick the field goal. To throw the ball there and have the ball hit the ground is the most ridiculous thing ever. That is a fireable offense. That is complete malpractice, what Sirianni did. And the Eagles just gag away a game. And, boy, some of these games, these endings, you go from, wow, this is going to be a bad beat on Atlanta plus the 5.5 because it looked like Philly might get either in the end zone or kick the last field goal to go up by six. Although Barkley had caught it, they were just going to get the first down, nothing more, kneel out the clock, and the game lands on three. But – again, just a complete ridiculous decision to throw the ball there. And I know you can make the case, hey, he should have caught the ball. And if he catches it, nobody's saying anything. Game's over. And there is some truth to that. But even if he catches it and the game's over, it's still a bad process. You're still judging the results, not the process. You got to play the percentages. Just run the ball. I mean, QB sneak it twice. Your QB sneaking that tush push they do. They get a yard, 2 yards every single time. They always get what they need. It's basically unstoppable, even without Kelsey. I was shocked he threw the ball, and I know the play was there, and I know it was going to end the game. You can't do that, and that's a terrible loss for Philly. And Philly, look, I talked about it on Sunday. It doesn't appear, at least 2 weeks in, and these teams don't play in preseason anymore, so these teams will get better. These teams will shape up, and I don't want to start just counting teams out in week two, and they were a dropped ball away from being 2-0, and you'd feel probably differently about them. In terms of a contender, though, if you want to put the Eagles on the short list of contenders, I'd be very careful to do that. That defense was bad last year. It was bad at the end of the season. They were horrible. Couldn't get any stops. Remember, Tampa ran all over them in that playoff game, threw it all over them. They couldn't tackle. I think people, and I've said this on here, people were too quick to forgive. Oh, it was no big deal. You know, they got new coordinators. I don't care what coordinators you have. They stink on defense. Bijan Robinson looked like he can run for 8-9 yards a carry. I don't know why they got away from that like they did in the second half. Atlanta did. So good win for Atlanta. Philly, major, major concerns defensively. Even 2 years ago when they made the Super Bowl, you go back and look at the quarterbacks they played. I remember they played Daniel Jones in the division round. They played the 49ers where Purdy got hurt. You could say, hey, they knocked Purdy out of the game. Sure, but they had basically Josh Johnson and McCaffrey came in to run the Wildcat. They didn't have to play any quarterbacks. And then we played a good quarterback in Mahomes. Mahomes scored every time he needed to, pretty much. So this has not been a good defense for a couple of years, and I don't know if they're a good enough defense to actually be on the short list of contenders. With Barkley, with Hurts, with some of their weapons, do they have enough to make the playoffs and win the East? Yeah, maybe. Dallas isn't a great team, so I don't know. They could get to 10-11 wins with their weapons and with their team. I still like Hurts as a player. That's the other thing, too, about the Monday night game. He's at like the 45-yard line, his own 45. You got 20-something seconds left. They have a timeout. These kickers make it from basically, you know, midfield now routinely. You did not need to throw a hero ball like that 30 yards down the field, 20 yards down the field. You know what? Take what's there. If you're not, throw it away. You can run for 5 yards pretty much anytime you want, 5-10 yards. You got 3 or 4 plays left at least. You did not, the risk was not worth it there where you throw it up and you hope for the best. That was a bad decision. Although I still like Hurts as a player. I like Barkley. They've got enough offense, I think, to win 10 games. And I would put them in Dallas, you know, coin toss to win the division. Washington's not winning it. The Giants aren't winning it. But as far as actually winning a championship, I would be very concerned with that Philly defense. So crazy game. Philly went from shouldn't have covered, but could have covered, then losing the game outright. Good win for Atlanta, and just complete malpractice by Sirianni. The other things in the NFL, first of all, there's been a million injuries. I would sit here and list all the injuries. I don't have time to list all the injuries. I mean, we know about McCaffrey. He's on IR. Tua's on IR. Debo Samuel, Cooper Kupp. You go down the line, A.J. Brown. I'm sure I'm leaving guys out here. There are so many guys. Pacheco with a broken leg for the Chiefs, that running back. I mean, there's just so many. Addison for the Vikings. So many guys banged up here. early in the season. I know it's football and there's always injuries. I can't remember this many high profile injuries this early in the season. So it is absolute carnage in terms of these injuries. You're playing fantasy football, man. You are hitting that waiver wire because there are a lot of marquee guys banged up early in the season. The other thing, and I'll get to the Thursday night game in a minute, just quickly, Bryce Young was benched on Monday. I thought that I know how bad he's been. He was awful last year. He was awful the first two games this season. They are not even a competitive team. I would have thought they'd give him another month, another 2 months. You traded all this in the draft. Make sure he's terrible. I mean, I know it's only two games in. Just give it a couple more, I don't know, months, games, whatever. What is the rush to play Andy Dalton? And what, can you get to five or six wins? Maybe things break right. You win seven games. I mean, their win total is actually at 3.5 now, which it's hard to say because with Young playing, there was no way for them to possibly win four games, I wouldn't think. But it's hard to know how much of it is Young, how much of it's the rest of the team. Maybe they put Dalton in. They look like a respectable team. So to me, that's a stay away. It's just interesting. And they are like 100, 121 to win the division, which, hey, if your thought process is Bryce Young was that bad, the rest of the team's not terrible, the division's still not that good, 121 to win the division, you take a flyer on that. I don't think that's terrible. But I would have given him some more rope just to be absolutely sure that he's bad. And I think he is bad. I just don't know that he has the dimensions to play the position, but I am shocked he's this bad. And I'm a little surprised they didn't give him some more rope. And look, he's the first pick in the draft. Somebody will take a shot on him at a cheap price. These coaches all think they can fix everybody. And they'll say, hey, I got a better offensive line. I got better weapons. I'll bring him into my system. I'll reinvigorate him. I'll bring his career back from the dead. And maybe somebody will. And God knows we need more quarterbacks because the quarterback play in the league has been awful, but we'll see if somebody can revive his career a la Baker Mayfield. He goes to the Rams in Carolina and he went from the scrap heap to he's a respectable starter again. So maybe now Young was never a respectable starter in the first place in the NFL, but he was the first pick in the draft. We'll see, somebody takes a chance on him, whether it's trade deadline, off season, but I am a little surprised they pulled the plug on that quickly. Before I get to baseball here, the Thursday night game, as we're recording this, sitting at 6.5, Jets favored over the Patriots by 6.5. And boy, we were very close to Jets being 0-2 and Patriots being 2-0. And this being a very dramatic third game for both teams where, my goodness, the Patriots, who nobody thought they'd win three games maybe all season, going for their third win, and the Patriots looking to avoid a disastrous 0-3 where you have to worry about Salah's job security. And hey, even if they lose this game, that's still on the table. But a little of that drama has been alleviated by the fact that Jets came back and won, Patriots blew the game, and they are both 1-1. If I could get a 7, I would play the Patriots. I don't have a great feel for this game. I don't want to give out a pick just to give out a pick. It is a tough travel rest situation with the Jets. Remember, they played Monday night in San Francisco, and then they had to play on a short week against Tennessee. Now they're playing on another short week, so I would worry about that. And look, they won the other day against Tennessee, but they were very lucky, not just to win, but to especially to cover. Lucky to cover, very, very lucky to, lucky to win, very lucky to cover, because blocked punt by the Titans, Levis does what Levis does. And if you're saying, hey, that's what you get for backing bad quarterbacks, maybe there's some truth to that. But Levis threw points away in the red zone, just completely, dropped the ball for no reason when they could have just gone to the ground and taken the 3 points. Blocked punt, roughing the passer on 3rd and 15, that would have been 4th and 15. There were a lot of things that went against the Titans. And, if you're the Titans, if you bet the Titans last week, you're getting 4 in a game where you outgained the Jets. You figure you got a decent chance to cover that. So I have not been that impressed with the Jets. Should have expected some growing pain, some rust, and maybe they'll start to come into shape here and look like the team we expected. Remember, they got banged up on injuries with injuries on defense, and their defense has not been dominant like we'd expected. So we'd be leaning towards the Patriots, but I need the 7. Never rush to take the 6.5 because who knows, you might get a 7, and I think it's 50-50 that you will get a 7. People, like to bet the favorite. People like to bet the favorite in standalone games. All of these favorites have gotten crushed here. The underdogs did well, really well last week. And that's the other thing. That's the other reason I lean towards the Patriots here. It's just very hard to lay points in this league. It really is. These games are so random. There's so many variables. There's so much with the refs, the flags, and we've seen a million flags here. Turnovers, bounce of the ball. It's a very hard league to lay points in, and never say never. And you can't just bet the underdog and blindly make money. If it were that easy, everyone would do it, but it is a tough league to lay points in. So be lean towards the Patriots at 6.5. If it gets to 7, I would take New England. Quickly on the baseball, Yankees play West Coast all of this week. So by the time I'm recording this, they will have either won or lost against the Mariners, but the Orioles are losing at the moment 4-0 to San Francisco. They go into this game both these teams. Yankees up 3, 12 games to go. So by the time you're listening to this, there will be 11 games to go. And the Yankees will, I would think, be at least up 3. As long as the Giants can hold on to this 4-0 lead, bottom of the seventh here. Yankees, even if they lose to Seattle, will be up 3 with 11 to go. At best, up 4 with 11 to go. And I know they play 3 head-to-head, but if you're up 4 with 11 to go, you're starting to get into territory where it's very hard to make up that many games in such a short period of time. And Baltimore has just not played well here for a long period of time, can't hit. So if the Yankees can put that race away, there aren't that many races that are up for grabs. I know Dodgers, Padres head into this Tuesday night with the Dodgers only leading by 3.5. And as I'm recording this, Dodgers are losing. But if you look at the rest of the schedule, Dodgers play the Marlins and the Rockies, 9 of the last 12 games, 10, 6 of the last 12 games. And the other 6 against the Rockies, 3 against the Marlins, and the other 3 are head-to-head against the Padres. So if you're the Padres, you at least get them head-to-head, face-to-face. But you got to figure the Dodgers are just going to clean up against the Rockies, and it's going to be very hard to catch LA. So LA's going to win the division. Looks like Cleveland's going to win their division. Seattle's still hanging within 4 games or so. But again, 4 games, it's not July. We're sitting here with less than 2 weeks left. 4 games is a lot of games to make up. So all of these divisions are pretty much spoken for. The only thing left to decide, I would think here, are the wild cards. The Tigers making a push miraculously in the wild card in the American League. And then you have 4 teams for 3 spots in the National League in terms of the wild card. The 2 West teams, Arizona, the Padres. Then you have the 2 East teams, the Mets, the Braves. Mets with a tough schedule, regardless of what does happen here going forward. The Mets were 11 games under 500, kind of a gap year. They traded Scherzer, they traded Verlander. The fact that the Mets are even in the mix here is a miraculous job, although I do think they're going to fall just a little bit short because they have a tough schedule coming up. They play in Atlanta 3 times. Next week, they play Milwaukee, they play Philly again. I feel like Mets fall a little short, although I am rooting for them to make it, just because I do think it'll be a fun story. I've talked about Atlanta, back in the summer. I remember Memorial Day when Acuña got hurt. I suggested, 10-1 for them to miss the playoffs was a good bet. And they are certainly in range of missing the playoffs. I do think they ultimately get in. So pennant race baseball, football, it is a good time of the year. It's a fun time of the year. We will talk about football next. NFL Week 3 with Ian McMillan. That is next. This Should Bet More podcast. All right, we are back. Should Bet More podcast. You can catch him, SI Now, Bacon Bets podcast. He's been on before and he's back again. It is Ian McMillan. Ian, you're a Falcons fan. So before we get to the Thursday games, I'll just ask you how you're feeling, let you take a victory lap. What's going on? How's everything?
Yeah, no, I'm a Falcons fan and a Maple Leafs fan. So I have been on the wrong side of late game collapses more times than I can count. And this might be the first time in my memory where I was on the right side of it. So last night when it happened, it was like I didn't even know how to react. This is a feeling I'm not familiar with. One of my teams, I think I saw, had a 0.7% chance of winning late in the game, and then they actually pulled it off. Like I said, I'm used to being on the opposite side of that a lot. So you know what? It's just nice to win one. It's nice for one of those games to go my way. It was a fun one. A lot of concerns after week one with Kirk Cousins. Still not quite as sharp as we'd like to see Kirk Cousins play, but significant improvement from week one, especially on that last drive. Defense still looked pretty good. Yeah, I mean, if Kirk Cousins can continue to improve as he kind of gets used to playing on that Achilles, Falcons, I think, should be a playoff team. Now, I'm a little concerned about them winning the division with how good the Saints and Bucks have looked. But they can get in the playoffs if Kirk keeps playing the way that he did on the final drive.
Yeah, usually on these Wednesday podcasts, I'm not going to spend too much time on the Monday night game. But that was just so ridiculous what Sirianni did. I mean, it's 3rd and 3. I'm sure as a Falcon fan, you're saying, hey, throw the ball. Let the ball hit the ground, maybe, and we have a chance. If they just QB sneak it twice, run it twice, with the way they're running, you're going to probably get the first down. If nothing else, you leave Atlanta like a minute. Were you as shocked as anybody with how Sirianni handled that?
No, you know what? Because, I mean, the play call actually worked. I mean, at the end of the day, the ball was in Saquon's hand. I mean, they could have ran the ball and Saquon could have fumbled. And then I don't think anyone would have blamed Sirianni. So, I mean, listen, Saquon had the game-clinching catch in his hands. Clearly was going to be a first down, and he dropped it. He's had some. So maybe, I guess, the issue with Sirianni is the fact that he threw the ball to a running back who has had some drops in his career. He is good out of the backfield, obviously yards after the catch, but Barkley has had some drops throughout his career. So Maybe the move was just to run the ball, but I mean, hindsight's 20/20. He catches the ball, it's an easy first down, no one even talks about it. So I will say, well, it did feel a little bit of poetic justice, a little bit of karma. I had to sit there sweating through my team in a pivotal game in the fourth quarter and have Jason Kelce in the booth. The most biased pro one-sided team broadcast I've ever watched in my life. And then for the Falcons to come back like that was very nice. Cause that entire, I mean, maybe I'm just being a little bit sour, but that entire broadcast, I've never heard something be more one-sided in my life. So it was nice for that crowd, for that broadcast to be silenced a little bit, with that Falcons win.
Yeah. They eventually got him out there, but I completely agree. They eventually got him out of the booth. It's not a preseason game. And it's a national audience. It's not a local Philly broadcast. Like half right. The people are rooting for the Falcons, or, you know, a good portion of the people are either rooting for the Falcons or don't care, just want to watch the game. We don't need Jason Kelce shoved down our throat for 10, 15 minutes, drive after drive. It's enough of Kelce already. He's on all these pregame shows, he's on every commercial. I totally agree. That was completely unnecessary, completely over the top. I get you. He's in there for maybe, you know, a drive or something, say hello. They're doing whatever, first game back in Philly. But after that, way, way too much Kelce.
Yeah, especially, I mean, if you're going to have him a little bit later in the game, have him in the first half. Like, this is like a one-score, back-and-forth, close game in the first half of the fourth quarter. Like, I don't feel like that's the time. Have him on for a couple drives in the first quarter. Then I'm completely fine with it. But, like, I'm sweating my team, sweating my bet, and I got to listen to Jason Kelce just say how great the Eagles are and how much he loves Philadelphia.
Yep, totally ridiculous. Good point. Thursday night game. Jets laying 6.5 against the Patriots, total 37.5. Boy, we were very close. Not very close, but we were close enough to Jets being 0-2 and the Patriots being 2-0, and this just being filled with drama. Where, man, can you imagine the Jets going to 0-3 with all these expectations? The Patriots with a chance to go to 3-0. Didn't happen. Jets came back and won. Patriots came back and lost. So each team sitting at 1-1. Any feel, any lean for this game, side, total props, anything you like?
Yeah, I do like the Jets in this one. I think the Patriots, I mean, a few weeks ago before the season started, we were all looking at the Patriots as the worst team in the NFL. I believe they had the shortest odds to finish with the worst record. And then they upset the Bengals and then take the Seahawks into overtime. You know, two impressive performances, but still at the end of the day, those two games aren't enough for me to kind of think that the Patriots are a half-decent team. I think this might be a little bit of a snap back to reality. This might be a game that may remind everyone, oh, right, the Patriots are one of the worst teams in the NFL. Now, the Patriots' defense is still actually a solid unit, so I don't think they're going to, at this point, finish with a worst record in the NFL. But still, this offense with Jacoby Brissett and Demario Douglas and Ramondre Stevenson, like, this is not an offense that's going to continue to be in tight games. They're going to be on the wrong end of a couple blowouts. And now with the Jets going back to their home field for the first time this season, a Jets offense that most likely is only going to get better as the season goes on, as Aaron Rodgers, similar to Kirk Cousins, you know, coming off the same injury, it's going to take both Rodgers and Cousins a couple starts to kind of get a little bit more confidence, you know, in that Achilles. And now that Rodgers has two starts under his belt, looked a little bit better, much like Cousins in the second half of their week two game. I think this could be a little bit of a coming out party for the Jets offense. So, I'm laying the points with the Jets on Thursday night.
Big picture. Some of these teams that have been a little bit surprising or above expectations: Saints, Bucks, Vikings, Chargers. I'll throw Arizona in there. I'll throw Seattle in there, even though 2-0 against two teams you probably expected to beat. Any of those that are, you think, hey, this team is definitely for real, or any of those you think, hey, this is not going to last?
Yeah, I think the Saints are the obvious one, just because we have seen such significant changes to their offense, bringing in Clint Kubiak. We've seen a team that has gone from 31st, I believe it was, to in pre-snap motion last year, to I think now they do the most pre-snap motion or one of the most teams. And the Saints the past couple of years are a team that before the season you would see the players on their offense and you'd be like, man, on paper this team looks pretty good. Chris Olave, Alvin Kamara, Derek Carr. I mean, obviously he's not an elite quarterback, but Derek Carr has had some very strong seasons. Back in 2016, he was third in MVP voting. So you looked at the Saints the past couple of years, you expected them to be better than what they ended up being. And now maybe it was because of their offensive coordinator. Now with Clint Kubiak, you have a competent offensive coordinator that's able to use those weapons, those, you know, recognizable names on the offense. So now, are they going to score 40 points every single game this season? No, absolutely not. But if you're, you know, asking me about the 2-0 teams that I think are the most sustainable, the surprising ones, I think it's the Saints. The one that I think might be the least sustainable is the Vikings, even though they have looked good in those first two games. I'm just still not sold on Sam Darnold. I can't have two solid games of Sam Darnold just make me forget about a career worth of games that we've seen up to this point. I think Kevin O'Connell's a very good coach, but Sam Darnold, at the end of the day, I think is going to have a little bit of a wake-up call here sooner rather than later. So, yeah, I think Saints are probably most sustainable. Vikings are probably least. Chargers are another interesting team, too. Not exactly, you know, the most difficult first two games. I think the Chargers are going to be good but not great. I don't think they're going to fall off, but I don't think they're going to keep winning. You know, they're not going to have a perfect season either. So, but Chargers are intriguing. They're a team that, you know, that could flirt with a playoff spot in the AFC, especially with some of the teams that we had penciled in for a playoff spot, like the Bengals, like the Ravens starting off 0-2. So Chargers are also an interesting one. Very well coached, obviously, with Jim Harbaugh.
Yep, absolutely. And it's an interesting game this week against Pittsburgh where somebody's going to be 3-0 and maybe the winner of that game, that coach is the early clubhouse leader for coach of the year. I think that'd probably be the case. We'll go flip side here. The teams that have started poorly, not meeting expectations, which ones do you think are in trouble and which ones do you think can kind of dig out of this or will dig out of this? I'll throw them at you. Jags, Ravens, Bengals, and I'll throw the Rams in there. I think the Rams are in some serious trouble with all their injuries and their schedule. They get San Francisco this week, although San Francisco is banged up. What about these teams that have underachieved?
Yeah, I think that the Rams are toast. Just an all-time disaster to start with. I think if Cooper Kupp and a couple other players who are doubtful this week, if they end up going up on IR, it's like 7 starters on IR already this season, which is insane. The Ravens, I will say the Ravens, but the Ravens defense, specifically their secondary, some cause for concern there. I mean, they lost their defensive coordinator, Mike McDonald, head coach in Seattle now. They lost Patrick Queen to Pittsburgh. That loss can't be understated. And they have given up some yards through the air. I mean, you kind of expect that in week one to Patrick Mahomes, but Gardner Minshew had a pretty good game throwing the ball in the Raiders win in week two. So, but at the end of the day, the Ravens still very good offensively, very well coached. I do think the Ravens are going to bounce back. I still think they're the team to win the AFC North. I'm not high on the Bengals whatsoever, despite, you know, playing Kansas City pretty closely last week. So of the 0-2 teams that I'm probably the most confident in, it is in Baltimore, but they don't have the same team they had last year. They're not going to be the number one seed in the AFC. They're not going to be, in my opinion, a true Super Bowl contender. But they'll bounce back after this 0-2 start.
Well, anything else you like here in week three?
Yeah, just looking through my list. I mean, I do the stupid thing of betting on every single NFL game, and I've locked in all my picks. So I already have 16 games locked in for week three. I'll stick to the team I was just talking about, the Ravens. I do think the Ravens bounce back. I think they get a win against the Cowboys in what might be the game of the week this week. I think this is a bad matchup for the Cowboys stylistically. The Cowboys, the past number of seasons, have struggled to stop the run. That is the same case again this year so far through the first 2 weeks, giving up 4.9 yards per carry. Now take on a Ravens team who have, once again, unsurprisingly, been very good at running the football. If Baltimore can keep the ball on the ground, protect the ball, and play a little bit better defense in the secondary, I do like the Ravens to get their first win on the road here against Dallas. That's probably one of my better bets. And I will say another pick that I really like in this. This kills me because I'm going to pick against my Falcons, especially after that strong Monday night football game. But I think the Chiefs just trounce the Falcons. I can't envision Patrick Mahomes not tearing through this Falcons secondary. If there's one weakness in the Falcons defense, it's their lack of depth in the secondary. And if there's a quarterback that can take advantage of a lack of depth in a secondary that he's facing, it's Patrick Mahomes. Also, Falcons pass rush, certainly not great. Better than last year. But their pass rush still leaves a lot to be desired for. So you're going to leave Patrick Mahomes time in the pocket and, you know, a very top heavy secondary. You got two good safeties, one good corner. Other than that, not much in the Falcons secondary. I think Mahomes might have a field day on Sunday night.
Fun game, Detroit, Arizona, right around the key number. There's some threes. There's some expensive 2.5s. Detroit at Arizona laying the points here. Total 52.5, a very high total. You don't see totals like this in the NFL anymore. Any feel for that game? What did you bet?
Yeah, I like the points with the Cardinals. I have some concerns about the Lions right now, because the Lions defensively are not going to be a great defensive team. So for them to have success, they need to have play as well offensively as they did last season. And we have not seen that so far. Jared Goff, we'll see. I mean, through the first 2 weeks, not great. 6.3 yards per throw. That's 1.3 yards per throw fewer than last week. A QBR of just 37.1. A few interceptions, only one touchdown pass. Unless the Lions offense really starts clicking, they're going to have some issues this season. And if you want to talk about an offense that is clicking, the Cardinals offense has been unbelievable to start the season. This is kind of what I expected from the Cardinals, that they're going to be very good offensively this year, especially, you know, I like James Conner a lot. Marvin Harrison, obviously, had his breakout game this past season, or this past week. Cardinals are going to be bad defensively as well. So I see why this total is so high, two bad defenses. So what team am I going to trust? The team that's been much better offensively through the first 2 weeks, not to mention that team is at home, not to mention that team is getting a field goal worth of points. To me, that one's a no-brainer. I'll take Arizona with the points.
Panthers, Raiders laying 5.5. How do you adjust for the young move? Is this, hey, it doesn't matter, the team stinks anywhere? Is Dalton, hey, he's at least a warm body and anybody's better than Young? And do you think that was the right move? Would you have given Young a little more rope to prove how bad he is?
I probably would have given Young a few more games. But then again, I mean, he's what, 18 games in his career? He hasn't had a good game yet. I don't think a single good game. I think one of their wins last year was against the Falcons. I think they won 9-7. But I mean, at the end of the day, listen, the Panthers are rebuilding. The Panthers are not going to be a playoff team. So what is putting Andy Dalton in going to do? Get you a couple more wins and then a worse draft pick. And then you're not going to get, you know, whatever elite quarterback comes out. So I would have just kept riding with Young at least for a few more weeks. I'm now going to bet the Raiders this week. Is Andy Dalton better than Bryce Young? Sure. Is he as good as what the line movement has indicated, which the line has moved down, 2 points? It was 7. If the Raiders 5.5 now, I got them at 5 last night. So when I bet it, it moved down 2 points. The total moved up 4 points. Listen, Andy Dalton's a backup in Carolina for a reason. He's 35 years old. He hasn't been good in a number of years. He might be a point better than Bryce Young, but I think the line movement was a little bit of an overreaction. This Panthers roster has a lot of holes. They've already lost their best defensive player for their season. Their defense is not good as a whole. Their offensive line surprisingly has been decent, though. So it could be interesting, but I'm still going to lay with the points with the Raiders playing their first home game of the year.
Where does this go with Young? Does somebody trade a mid-round pick? There's one of these. You know how these coaches think, hey, I could fix him, put him in my scheme, behind my offensive line, with my weapons. I can make this work. So my guess is somebody takes a shot on him. Is that how you see this going?
Yeah, most likely. Number one overall pick. Someone's going to take another shot at him. Yeah. I think I saw a rumor the Giants could be interested, potentially. If
why not? You know what? Why not?
If Daniel Jones is not going to work out, and to be fair, Daniel Jones did look a little bit better in week 2, but this is, you know, once again, for the Giants, this is not going to be a playoff season for them. This is a season where they need to figure a ton of things out. Who's behind Daniel Jones right now? Is it still DeVito?
I think they have Locke there, but Locke is hurt, so it might be DeVito with the backup. Yeah,
bring in Bryce Young and see what he can do. Now, Bryce Young would then be going to one of the worst offensive lines in football, which might be an even bigger disaster. One of those teams who kind of have a quarterback that they don't really trust, not going to be a playoff season. Someone will take a shot at on a former number one overall pick.
And totally agree.
I think the Giants make the most sense.
Totally agree. From a team standpoint, it probably makes sense from these teams that have nothing to lose to take a shot at them. From his perspective, it'd probably be the best if somebody like the Chiefs or somebody really good traded nothing for him, like a fifth or sixth rounder, coming, hey, be a backup, sit behind Mahomes, you get more reps in, you can develop a little bit. And I don't know if development's the problem or it's just lack of, you know, fundamental size and these prerequisites you need to be an NFL quarterback. So it'd be interesting. But like you said, somebody will bite at some point on him.
Yeah, I mean, maybe, I guess the Dolphins just signed Hunter.
That's another team I was thinking of. Well, if you put him with good weapons, then at least you could see. I mean, I don't think it's going to work anyway, but that would be the last hope, I think.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah, but I like your idea of having him sign. That would probably be the most beneficial for him, would for him to go to a good team as a backup and take some time to not only develop, but the kid's got to get his confidence back. Because even if he goes to a new team and has to start right away, Bryce Young has zero confidence. You can see it in his body language. He was almost crying after throwing an interception last week. it's a disaster for him mentally right now. So yeah, I mean, I like him, seems like a good guy. I hope he goes to a good team and gets to sit as a backup and learn and get some confidence back here the next couple of years.
Me too, because if anything, like the league needs quarterbacks. I mean, you watch the quarterback play throughout the league. It was bad last year, and yeah, it hasn't gotten much better this year. There's a lot of long drives, a lot of long field goals. It's the league needs quarterbacks, and you're right. Like, I'm not a quarterback coach, but it looks like he's almost fading away as he throws. He can't step up. I don't know if it's too small or he's afraid to get hit. It's just it's bad. Last couple before we get you out of here, any awards that interest you at this point, anything you're eyeing here, either rookie of the year, coach of the year, offensive rookie, whatever direction you want to go?
Yeah, let me take a quick look. Now, there was a bet I placed last week, and it didn't really work in my favor in week two, but I did like Ladd McConkey last week, who was still 35-1 to win offensive rookie of the year. He was kind of in week one for the Chargers. He was kind of the top option in the passing game. Wasn't the case in week two. Now, I don't know if the Chargers are just going to go like week by week. They're going to kind of try to figure out which receiver is going to be their guy on a weekly basis, or if one of them is going to kind of emerge as the top option. Does Derek Carr have any chance to win MVP?
Probably not. What number is it? If it's like 100-1, which I'm sure it's not. Okay, I'll bet anything 100-1.
No,
but if it's like 20 or 30-1, no.
That's what he was before the season started. I don't have all the books in front of me. The one I'm looking at right now is 33-1. So he's moved from 100-1 to 33-1.
Probably not.
But I mean, you look at his numbers, obviously 2-game sample size, very small sample size. But like I said earlier, I mean, it was almost a decade ago, but 2016, he finished third in MVP voting. So if you look at his numbers through the first two games, you're right. It probably is, the value is probably gone on it, but I mean, it's possible. I mean, you could bet it now, and if he keeps playing like this, it's only going to get shorter.
But yeah, I mean, we know what that award is. It's quarterback of a team who's a top two seed. So, I mean, he's at least, again, it's 2 games in, but I mean, is there a path for them to win 11 or 12 games and get a top two seed? Then you're on the very short list of guys that can win it. Absolutely. I get it.
Yeah, I also think even though last night, and I'm just seeing this now, Saquon Barkley was the favorite to win Offensive Player of the Year. He's dropped now, no longer the favorite. He still had a great game last night. Did he drop a game-clinching catch? Sure, but Barkley still had an extremely good game last night. I don't really know why his odds dropped. So might be time to buy low on Barkley at 9-1 to win Offensive Player of the Year. That might be the pick.
Yep, that's definitely not a bad one. Last one, are the Blue Jays going to make a run? Is there enough time for your Blue Jays?
I stopped paying attention to baseball. I figured they were out of it, and they gotta be out of it now, dude. I don't know. Do you have the standings in front of you?
No, they're definitely out of it. I'm just busting.
Yeah. I'm the kind of baseball fan where as soon as my team is out of it, I basically zone out. Now I'll watch the playoffs and obviously the World Series and all that stuff. But especially, I mean, the NFL came back. The NHL's, 2 weeks away.
That's amazing.
The golf season wrapped up here over the past couple of weeks. I think it was maybe the first weekend in August, I made the conscious decision. I sat down, I looked at the MLB standings. I was like, yep, my Blue Jays stink. They are out of it. And then baseball has left my mind since.
What's the problem? Because they're not that there's a decent amount of talent for how much they underachieve.
I think their manager is a problem. The rotation did not live up to expectations this year. I mean, Kevin Gausman didn't have a great season. Their bullpen was the worst bullpen in the majors, at least for the first 2/3 of the season. I don't know if they picked it up recently, but their bullpen, the amount of blown leads they had this season was, I mean, that's typical of the teams that I cheer for. So I don't know. Bo Bichette had an unbelievably bad year. I don't think he's played. I think he's, been hurt. And I don't know how much of that was a serious injury or how much of that was you're playing so poorly, let's just pack it up and try again next year, because you can't have Bo Bichette play that poorly. Thankfully, we got Vlad. Keep Vlad forever. Vlad is, he's an elite player. Everything else that could have gone wrong this season went wrong for the Blue Jays.
Yeah, and you were mentioning all the sports that are coming back soon. NHL a couple weeks away, which is hard to believe.
Yep.
College basketball, like 6 weeks away. I know you're a big college basketball guy. It seems like, UConn beat Purdue not that long ago, but you look up and 6 weeks, it sneaks up on you because you're so busy with football, Monday night football, Thursday night, all weekend. And then you look up and, before you know it, you have some of these exhibition games or some of these preseason tournaments starting.
Yeah, this is, we're entering the best time of the sports calendar where the sports equinox.
Yep,
be absolutely. A couple of weeks from that, NBA, NHL. Yeah, we're going to be a couple of weeks away from sports equinox.
Appreciate the time, man. Thanks for coming on. It was good to catch up. Let everyone know where they can find you.
Yeah, thanks so much for having me on. You can read my written work, si.com/betting. Check out the Bacon Bets podcast as well. And I also talk some non-betting NFL stuff on Stacking the Box podcast. So check that out as well if you're interested in some non-betting football talk.
All right. Appreciate the time. We'll do it again soon.
Thanks. Thank you so much, man. Take care.
All right, that will do it. Thank you to Ian McMillan. Appreciate him jumping on. And by the way, great point by him. I should have mentioned it in my open. I meant to mention it. The Jason Kelce thing, it is too much Jason Kelce. Every commercial, every booth, you name it, he is everywhere. It was too much the other day. I thought that was ridiculous. That was a good point by him. I disagreed with him on, you know, if Barkley catches the ball, the game's over and it's no big deal. That is still the wrong process, regardless of the result. But that was a great point by Kelce. I completely agree. It's way too much Kelce on all these outlets. But appreciate him joining. Appreciate you guys listening. We'll be back Friday. Rate, review, subscribe. See you Friday.